Blog Talk Radio.
The bloom, the swoon, the sugar's on your block. The plant is letting flesh in the corners of New York. The ghetto, the meadow, the Mr. Butterfly, the honey bugs dug and licked the honey. The kiss, the funk for a bit, the lips with the soul and some jazz for your hips. The puff, the buzz, the lips be heavy slick. The mecca get a rush when the beats be very thick. The hands, the feet, the brown baby treat. The femmes fumble loose and drink the noodle juice. The steps, the flams, the planets got damn. The people get a grip with the tape from a jam. A nickel bag of funk, a nickel bag of funk.
A nickel bag of funk, a nickel bag of funk.
A nickel bag of funk, a nickel bag of funk.
A nickel bag of funk, a nickel bag. The big, the fat, the cool, cool cat. The psychedelic soul puts the planets on the map. The chic, the love, the far out name. The lack of the funk's the main, why we came. The boogie gets done, the colors won't run. The funk hits the square, the kids gotta come. The pizza with the pop, the West Wolf stop. The crew after crew that do the grass hop. The true cool is black, the new school is fat. The beats by the ounce, the funk by the pack. The groove is the fix, the jitterbug fix. Hanging off the butts with the fat soul kicks. That's my nickel bag of funk. My nickel bag of funk.
A nickel bag of funk.
A nickel bag of funk. I said a nickel bag of funk. A nickel bag of funk.
Oh, a nickel bag of funk.
A nickel bag of funk. The wide, the hip. Dig it, it's the trip. The loops, the scene, and the funkifying it. The sounds, the pounds, the stacks, the flares. The baggy, baggy jeans. The naughty, naughty hair. The twinkle in the eye. The kisses living fly. The crew from the sky. The stuff that gets you high. The action. The work. Goes the whole nine. The papers won't rot, the vapors get got. The streets get the buzz, the funk off your block. The opium groove, the smacked out soul. The kicking it live, the fat gotta roll. With my nickel bag of funk, my nickel bag of funk.
A nickel bag of funk, a nickel bag of funk.
Yeah, it's a nickel bag of funk, a nick bag of funk.
A nickel bag of funk, a nickel bag of funk.
Nickel bag, a nickel bag. Ladybugger hit you with a nickel bag. A nickel bag, a nickel bag. Butterfly hit you with a nickel bag. A nickel bag, a nickel bag. Doodlebugger hit you with a nickel bag. A nickel bag, a nickel bag. DP's always hit you with a nickel bag.
Welcome to Headliners Ball. This show's format gives both authors and audience alike the chance to entertain a deeper discussion regarding a choice selection of poems from the author's catalog of work. Headliners will perform pieces in their intended style. In turn, they will receive encouraging feedback from an all-inclusive panel of late-night poet callers. I am Pam Ray, filling in for Jeremy F., and tonight the late-night poets are headlining Myriad Musings and Sam Sampson. And I would like to say welcome, first of all, to Miriam, glad you could be here.
Thank you.
And then I would like to say welcome to Sam. Glad you could be here.
Hi.
I hope you're both having a wonderful late evening.
Late
I hear somebody. I get it. Yep. Completely understand that. Oh, yeah. Well, you know, and for some of us, it's later than others, but I'm so glad that both of you could be here. We are going to go ahead and we are going to start with Myriad. I don't know why I keep saying Miriam.
That's okay.
Myriad. I will get it right. Third time's a charm. But we will start with you. One, because as Jeremy likes to say, when it comes to this show, chivalry is not dead. And we do try to do ladies first. And also because you are in the later time zone. So,
yeah,
that being said, yep, you're just an hour ahead of the time zone that Sam and I are in, so,
okay.
Yep. And, all right, I have put up your poem, When the World Was a Bigger Place, and go ahead and give that a read for us, please.
All right, give me one second. I'm just going to give a little background of this one. I wrote it probably a couple of years ago, and I had posted it somewhere on another site in another poetry group, and someone said it sounded like the perfect beginning to an epic. So it actually is the first poem so far in a series of seven that's going to become an epic poem. So called The Legion of the Heathen is what it's going to be all. But let me just get in there. Trying to get in there. Sorry, I'm just not used to this whole thing. I'll just get to where this thing is. And if you hear any snoring, that's my dog snoring in the background.
All right. Well, you'll probably hear mine snoring too, so they can snore together.
Yeah, my dog likes to snore loud. He's right next to me. Wow, it's pretty bad. All right. Where would I go to actually see where you have that put up? Right there. Okay. When the world was a bigger place. When the world was a bigger place, it ebbed and flowed with a subtle grace. The oceans were much more vast, and time elapsed less fast. An albatross was a welcome stranger for warning of impending danger, and the compass granted egress with its dial. Fidelity was not always in style when betrayal ran as rampant as loyalty. Turning a peasant or pauper into royalty was one majestic deed, heroic, bold. A man's destiny foretold by a scar in the palm of his hand. A rune read by one who understands the delicate balance of nature, using its nomenclature as a divining rod. The undead resurfacing as gods, after crossing into the void, impossible to avoid, prayers muttered between well-intentioned lips, necromancy becoming an act of worship with a coin or two placed upon closed eyes, when a final goodbye to mourn a valiant death was expelled with an ale-soaked breath, in celebration as the dead ascended to the heavens.
Great read there, Myriad. You know, I really like that you preempted this with the background information on how this is part one of a seven-part epic poem. And I think that is really cool that you've challenged yourself to do that, because there are certainly some poems that are more challenging than others, and to keep the flow of an epic poem is one of those, and I definitely look forward to reading the other ones. My suggestion to you would be you should consider putting them all on a list, or, you know, like, and that way people can read them.
Yeah.
What's
that? That's a good idea, because they're all scattered.
Okay, but... yeah, I mean, excellent right. I like that there's this this sense of spirituality, of the balance between life and death. I particularly was drawn to a man's destiny foretold by a scar in the palm of his hand, a rune read by one who understands the delicate balance of nature using its nomenclature as a divining rod. Those are just amazing lines. And my question for you is, I would like to know how you got started writing poetry.
Well, I was about 16 years old, and I took a creative writing class, and I wrote probably a bunch of really crappy poetry, of which I think I ended up with 2 one-liners that I've finally used now, 35 years later. And I haven't written probably up until 4 years ago I started writing again. So between 16 and 4 years ago, I hadn't written at all. But I was an English major in college, and I just enjoy the form. I actually have been researching and self-teaching, teaching myself a whole bunch of different forms and formats and genres and techniques. So love poetry.
Oh, I like that. And, you know, I think many of us who first started writing poetry in our teens, and I love your honesty, definitely dished out some crap. So, yes. Yep, very relatable. And I would like to welcome my co-host, Arcana, to the show. Welcome, Arcana.
Good evening, everybody. Hi, Pam.
Hello, hello. Glad you could be here. And your thoughts on Marriott's poem?
I'm really sorry, but I was trying to fix the headphones because I couldn't hear anything, and I missed that first poem.
No problem. I will catch you on the next round. And Sam, your thoughts?
Oh, I agreed with you with that part that you were focusing on, the runes read by one who understands. My entire family is from Norway and Sweden and Norse, so we really know what runes are about. And I love that part of her poem.
Absolutely, absolutely. Great comment. All right, and let's see what we got next. Up next, we have your poem, Into the Forest.
Into the Forest, I actually wrote this because it was a contest entry for writing about the suicide forest in Japan. And so this is where this came from. So, Into the Forest. The creaking of the pines elicits icy shivers, like steel fingers raked upon a naked spine. Pine needles quivering, jagged splinters jabbed into desperate, thirsty veins. Slivers of pain, slices of sorrow, glimpsed through the gaping cracks between the bark as Sarquins whisper, then wail, weaving twisted tales of ennui and despair. Oh, the horrors they have seen while the sun giggles and gleams from her corner of the forest, peering from her perch amid the heavens, her cackles seep into the earth to settle among the dirt and the decay. As the emerald canopy leads the lost souls astray through the labyrinth of decomposing leaves, corpses cast off from the trees, disrobing before the fastidious eyes of their maker, undertakers laying out their palls for the weak and broken to bear.
Wonderful read, Marriott. And I would like to mention to both you and Sam, because I forgot to at the beginning of the show, that remember, this is your show. So if there's a particular poem that either one of you want to get to of yours on your set list, make sure to let us know. If there's any questions that you want to pass on, just feel free to do that, because like we said, this is your time to be featured. And, you know, so, and with that being said, Arcana, your thoughts?
Love this one. I love a bit of darkness, and I think Myriad's done a great job on this. I remember seeing a program some time ago about this forest in Japan where people go to commit suicide. It's bizarre and very, very dark. And I love the way that she's captured that feel with this piece. Slivers of pain, slices of sorrow, glimpsed through the gaping cracks between the bark, as stark winds whisper, then wail, weaving twisted tales of ennui and despair. Brilliant. I love the way that she's captured the whole feel and essence of this. I think it's a wonderful, wonderful piece. Very well done, Myriad. Loved it.
Thank you. I didn't win the contest, believe it or not, either.
Oh.
There were some really good entries in there. There were some great entries.
Oh, yes.
Well,
yes, she always does have great entries in her contest. And, yes, yeah, definitely a strong write, for sure. And Sam, your thoughts?
I love the imagery of that last stanza, the imagery of the decomposing leaves as corpses cast off from the trees. You know, you can just imagine yourself walking through that forest and looking at this ugly sort of brown covering of the ground with no green left around.
Yeah, those are really, I did like that imagery too. Great comment. Yeah, this is stunning imagery all the way through. It's a beautiful, dark poem taking us into a world of despair and pain. And I really like the imagery and the metaphors, but I also like that you threw in some personification, especially of the sun. Oh, the horrors they have seen while the sun giggles and gleams from her corner of the forest, peering from her perch amid the heavens. Her cackles seep into the earth to settle among the dirt and the decay. Just excellent lines there. Since I brought up personification, I would like to know from you, do you have some favorite poetic devices and some least favorite poetic devices?
I like to use a lot of alliteration. I just find myself doing that all the time. And I like sometimes how it sounds. Sometimes it's way too much, but I usually have to cut it down. I also like to use personification a lot and a lot of simile and metaphor.
Can I just ask, Myriad, do you have a preference for writing dark poetry? Is that where you feel that, you know, you get the greatest inspiration?
I actually do. I write a lot of nature poetry as well, but when it's nature and I can make it dark, I do tend towards that side, yes. I enjoy that.
Okay, cool.
Very cool. Very cool, yes. And great question there, Arcana. All right. And up next, I put your poem Into the Silence.
All right. This one was actually inspired by someone else who wrote, another poet friend of mine who wrote a poem about music. None of it is like anything the same, like any of the lines or any of the imagery is similar, but it just prompted me to write this. So I was happy to have that inspiration. Into the Silence. Music is the essence of beauty and elegance, an eternal, not ephemeral, an intelligence and eloquence, a presence and effervescence, transcending time and space, connecting the present to the future and the past in an everlasting way that is capable of repairing the devastation of our innocence, the pain of our existence. It is the resistance to the innocence we suffer alone, as we lose our vibrance, our evanescence, only to decay as we fade away into the silence.
Wonderful read there, Marriott. And this is a beautiful write. And I think music is such an important part of life. I like how you speak on the importance of it and how much it means to the spirit and to life in general. I really like music as the essence of beauty and elegance, eternal, not ephemeral, and intelligence and eloquence, a presence and effervescence. I like the use of the inner and end rhyme throughout this poem. It's beautifully written. So obviously, I'm guessing from this poem that you're very much into music. So I would like to know what kind of music you like to listen to, and if you could name like your top three favorite song lyricists, who would they be?
I'm not going to know that I can actually name. Well, you may not know who these guys are because I like stuff really heavy. I like Corey Taylor from Slipknot, and I used to like Cliff Burton and Dave Mustaine's lyrics together for Metallica way back in the day when they started.
Oh,
I
yes.
also
Good
have
stuff.
To like a little bit of Sting's lyrics. So.
Very cool. Very cool. And Arcana, your thoughts?
I love the way that you've captured how music makes you feel. These lines really stood out for me. In an everlasting way that is capable of repairing the devastation of our innocence, the pain of our existence, it is the resistance to the insistence we suffer alone. I think they're great lines that you've really sort of brought to the fore there, how music actually affects us, how it makes us feel. And in the final lines, our evanescence only to decay as we fade away into the silence. Without that music in our lives, there's an empty void of silence that just makes life not really worth living. We need to enjoy the sound of music. It brings so much comfort to us in so many different levels. And I think it's a brilliant write. Very, very well done.
Thank you.
Great comment. And Sam, your thoughts?
I love the rhythm of this poem. As you read it and the internal rhyming, and that really helps that rhythm along. For me, this poem is sort of hard to read. Not that it's not a beautiful poem, but some of you that might know me from AP know that I am slowly going deaf, and I am nearly there. I only have about 10% of my hearing left, so even participating tonight, you should see the machinery I have to use just to hear you guys. And I'm devastated that probably within the next year, I will no longer be able to hear the music. So it's a tough write for me because I love how she talks about how wonderful music is, but then those last lines really, really resonate with me because I'm slowly fading away. But, well, it is what it is.
I have that music in your head going still.
There you go. There you go. Yep. Well, you know, Sam, I really appreciate your honesty and your heart that you put into comment. And, you know, I think sometimes that's one of the most important things about poetry is when we're able to connect to it because it touches us on a personal level. So great
Absolutely.
Comment there. Yes, for sure, for sure. And all right, let's see what we have next. All right. Oops, that didn't quite work. Sometimes my screen bounces and misses things. All right. We have your poem up, Living the Dream.
And this is kind of a little socioeconomic, political kind of rant, kind of just in disguise as a poem. Living the Dream. Dreams are made just to be broken, even when they remain unspoken. Providing false hopes, circumstances will change if just a few things in your life rearrange. Advising you to always stay positive. And of yourself, be sure to give. Have faith in yourself and the kindness of man. Forget he'll destroy you because he can. They'll lie to your face and pretend life is pretty. Then deny what you've witnessed has any validity. They tell you to grow up and get a real job. All your joy they will steal and your happiness rob. Saying be grateful for all that you own. When you got it by being worked to the bone. That is not living, just being alive. Another bee just maintaining the hive. A cog in the wheel that hates when you thrive and keeps you beat down so you barely survive.
Great read there. I like how this one kind of has that rap, hip-hop vibe to it. And, you know, there are many reasons a poet needs to use their gift, their voice. And I think one of them is to speak up about the things that are wrong with society, to do those rants. I think every poet should have, you know, in their pocket those rants, those soapbox standing poems that they bring out. And I really like how this speaks on the idea that you can't just barely get by. You can't just be staying alive. You gotta, you know, you've gotta live life to the fullest. You can't just maintain it. You gotta do what makes you happy. When people mock you for, you know, wanting to be a poet, an author, when they mock you for wanting to be an artist or any of those other dreams that people consider frivolous, you know, don't listen to them. You know, I really like this all the way through, but especially they tell you to grow up and get a real job, all your joy that they will feel and your happiness robbed. You know, so excellent lines. And I would like you to tell me, what does your writing process look like when Mary Musing sits down or stands up or stands on her head to write? You know, what does that whole process look like?
It's a disaster. It's chaos. Basically, I'll start with, I like prompts a lot. And I like to just think, okay, I'm going to write about a bird. Then I'll go, what kind of bird? And then I'll figure it out. And then I'll go from there. I'll start thinking of words to describe it, what rhymes with that. I don't think of anything of – I like free verse a lot, so I don't think of anything that's going to necessarily work until I start reading it out as I'm writing it. I write with a kind of a flow. And usually it comes out in like one or two drafts, really without very much editing having to happen.
Very cool. I like that. I can relate to that. And
can
Sam,
I just ask Myriad,
when it just writes itself.
Can I just ask Myriad a question on that piece?
Sure.
Myriad,
sure, absolutely.
When you wrote this, is this coming from somewhere inside? Is this based on personal experience? Because I feel that there is pain behind this, from maybe abuse that you've had at some time. It seems to sort of echo through the piece, because the references there are to a male protagonist. So obviously being a female, I'm wondering whether this is based on a past relationship maybe.
It is kind of about, how long ago now? It's almost 6 years ago now. I was in a very severely physically, emotionally, and mentally abusive relationship. It was really bad, and I ended up getting a DUI because of it and violating probation and going to jail. And while I was in jail, he didn't pay the rent, so I lost the apartment, got a eviction on my name, and lost everything that was in it. He stole my cat. Well, he took my cat to take care of it, but then he refused to give him back, so he kind of catnapped my kitty. Stole my car, was trying to get repossessed, and he was just driving that around everywhere. And I lost every single thing I owned and just trying. I lived in Florida at the time and trying without a vehicle, without any money, just gotten out of jail, trying to rebuild yourself when you have nothing. And I had everything before that. I had a house. I had everything. I had a great paying job, all sorts of stuff. I didn't have that job when I got out. And there was just no way to make money. And there really aren't many resources. Everyone just use your resources. And there just aren't that many out there. I hear all the time, especially when I'm watching, like, anything political going on, I hear all the time about these freebies that they're handing out to everybody, and it's so easy to get. And I know for a fact it isn't.
Thanks for sharing
that.
You
got to jump through and paperwork. You got to try to provide proof. I mean, I lost everything. I lost proof of my marriages and my divorces to show that my name is what it should be. I lost all my tax returns. I lost my social security number was with it, the card. My birth certificate, everything. I had to kind of restart. I had to start all over again.
Thanks for your honesty and for sharing that, Myriad. I felt that through reading this. It sort of echoed through your words. Hey, that's low. Stealing somebody's cat, man, that's out of order.
Then he told me he was rehoming them, and he abandoned them. And then the guy he abandoned them at the house, he was an indoor cat, but he left him outside. The guy found me on Facebook. I don't even know the guy. He just found me from some of the paperwork that he had left behind and said, I think I've got something you want, and I got my cat back.
You got him back?
Yeah, I do.
Hey,
I did.
Great.
He
good on
from
you.
Florida to Connecticut with me. So.
Well, let me just say, I think it's a wonderful write. Like I say, I really felt it. And I think you've got a talent for rhyme as well. I'm quite surprised when I heard you say that you quite like free verse as well. I've not come across one of your free verse pieces yet, but it's clear that you're excellent at rhyming. And like I say, I think you've done an excellent job here of putting across your feelings that spoke from inside throughout this piece. Very well done.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
And great conversation and question there. And thank you, Marriott. I'm really sorry you had to go through all that stuff, but thank you for sharing your emotions and your honesty with us. I really appreciate it. And
absolutely.
Sam, your thoughts.
The line that really stuck out for me is, if just a few things in your life rearrange. As a teacher, I inner city, very disadvantaged youth. And I like the affirmation of this poem. And it was our job, I taught middle school, to reinforce this with our kids, that they didn't have to grow up and just be that worker bee. And they didn't have to be in a situation where life would just beat them down constantly. And that's what I get from this poem, is that it's an affirmation of faith that you can bring yourself up out of that.
Yeah, and that rearrange, what I was trying to get across with that, you know, everybody just says, you know, I'm in recovery, so, you know, nothing changes if nothing changes, kind of thing. But, you know, trying to pick out the one little thing to rearrange, I can tell you outright, if one little thing had happened differently, I never would have been in that abusive relationship or lost anything. It's just one little thing could have been rearranged. If I knew which one it was, I would have done it.
Absolutely. And great comment, Sam. Thank you. All right. Now, before we go on to the next poem, this is the part of the show where, Marriott, we give you the opportunity to shamelessly promote yourself. We do know, obviously, you're on All Poetry. I also know from looking at your page that you have several books published. So tell us about where we can read you and where we can purchase your books.
You can find me on Facebook too. I've got a poetry page. It's not under Marriott Musings though, because that was like taken all over the place. So it's under The Poetry of Me, MD on Facebook. You follow me there. I've got about 1,000 followers going on right now. And that's where I'm posting a lot of my new stuff. And it's a very interactive community. So it's just like All Poetry is. It's great. So I can be found there. And my books, I self-published through Lulu Publishing, and there is a link to that right on my All Poetry page, right on my front page or on my about information. And I'm also available in an author on Amazon. So
wonderful. Yes, so I highly recommend that people, when they get a chance, go to Marriott Musings' page on All Poetry and check out her books that she has up. Click on those links. See if any of them interest you, because she's definitely a very talented poetess. And the poem we have up next is Every Melancholy Moment.
All right. This one came about because you'll see there's lists, and those lists were just going on in my head. I don't know why. I was going back and forth with some of those things, and I decided to try to write a poem about it, and this is what came out. Like, every melancholy moment in my memory, every random rambling, raving reverie, every feeling of grief or sorrow or misery,
every broken promise or unsolved mystery plays a lead role in my sprawling history. The master to my disaster, the owner to my loner, the ruler to my vassal, the leader to my roamer, the predator to my prey, the sun to my moon, the color to my gray. And I know soon my future will bring me hope, cyan and citrine where there's only taupe, a step ladder when I'm at the end of my rope, the larger meaning of my narrow scope, a reason to smile instead of just mope, the boon to my bane, the joy to my rage, the pleasure to my pain, the key to my cage, the love to my hate, the light to my darkness, the destiny to my fate, the chaos to my abyss. For all that, don't you dare make me wait. And that was kind of just like the fate out there telling me, destiny, don't make me wait any longer.
Wonderful reading right there. And Arcana, let's start with your thoughts.
Great read. I was just like gobsmacked, really, as we're going through all those antonyms that she's come up with. The master to my disaster, the owner to my loner, the ruler to my vassal, the leader to my roamer, the predator to my prey, the sun to my moon, the color to my gray. Brilliant. I think that's just really inventive, the way that you've done that and put that together. You said at the start that you just sort of like poured your thoughts out. And the way that you've composed this is a thing to behold. It's a wonderful piece of poetry that you've managed to produce here. And I love the rhymes. I love the content. And I think you've done an excellent job here. Great, great writing, Myriad. Well done.
Thank you.
And Sam, your song. Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry.
I was just going to say that second set wasn't really kicking around in my head. It was that top set that was kicking around in my head. That second set I had a little bit of difficulty coming up with. Now, where am I going to get to rhyme and to work in here? And I think when I got near the, I think when I got to the love to my hate, it got a lot easier.
No, I think it's great. I think it's great all the way through. I don't think that any part of it is weak. I think the whole thing just flows beautifully, and I think that, you know, it all just flows into a perfect flow of poetry.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Absolutely. And Sam, your thoughts.
I was just going to echo what he was saying, that I write almost all free verse, and I'm not great at rhyming, and I think this piece just really works incredibly well. And the thought that had to go into each and every part of the list, they're just incredible. It's just, he was just saying, there's really nothing weak in this poem at all. It's wonderful.
Absolutely.
Yes, for sure. Great comments, both of you. Yeah, I really like this wonderful use of alliteration and imagery. I like how with the two lists, it could almost be a form of its own. And I like it all the way through. I did really particularly like the juxtaposition in the second list, the boon to my bane, the love to my hate, the pleasure to my pain. I mean, all great uses of the, and what a wonderful write on the idea of finding balance in love and life. So very well done. And Myriad, I'd like to know, do you have favorite classic poets or authors that you like to read?
I love to read. Well, these are going to sound like everybody's, but, you know, Edgar Allan Poe fan, T.S. Eliot fan. For poetry, I also like Sylvia Plath and Charles Bukowski. But as far as authors go, I'm a horror person. I'm a really big Clive Barker fan.
Clive Barker, definitely very cool. Yep, I have to agree with you on that one.
Like his book, Wait, you know, old... I thought those books are something else. Like the imagination on that guy is something else.
Do you like of the old classic stuff? Do you like any of the old Hammer horror stuff?
I'm sorry?
Do you like any of the old classic horror stuff, like the old Hammer horror movies?
Oh, yeah, I do. I like the old-time ones. I have Mary Shelley's Frankenstein, and I have the Dracula book, too. I've got all the originals. I like those.
Fair play to you.
Very cool. Very cool. All right. And let's see what we have next. All right. We have The Moment I Died.
All right. This was kind of with that relationship I was talking about in mind. I nearly died. I mean, it was really bad. I had concussions and a lot of broken bones, or a couple of broken bones, just really severe. So I think he would have killed me if he knew I had money coming in that I didn't realize was coming in. I think he would have killed me for it. So this is where this is coming from. To you, up till the moment I died, while I clung to the remnants of pride, as there was nothing left to hide, since I had been denied the opportunity to paint the sky blue, even one final time for you. And that's exactly when I knew I was already dead to you. I was gone from your eyes, erased from your stories and lies, unworthy of your alibis, as you shifted your focus to the next prize. When you saw that I knew your lies weren't the truth, you left me alone to die on my own. Without you by my side, the tears that I cried, with my bare hands I dried, the very last moment before I died.
Wonderful read and write there, Marriott. And before we continue on with the discussions, I'd like to welcome Weaver of Dreams, a.k.a. Kate, to the show. She's come to join us for the poetry discussion. So welcome, Kate. Glad you could be here.
Hi, Kate.
Well, I only hope you can hear me. I don't know. Can you hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you.
We can, yes.
Oh,
absolutely.
Oh, good. Okay, carry on, ladies. I'm here, and gentlemen. I'll just listen.
Very cool. Well, I would like to start the comments out with Sam's thoughts.
So, I got to the line, the opportunity to paint the sky blue, and about how I was just caught up in the whole, I'm having a hard time phrasing it here. It's just that I was caught in the whole sort of the wish to continue to live, and I get the sense that it was, I'm having a hard time articulating this. That you knew that you needed to live.
Yeah, sometimes that's a difficult thing. You know, that idea of that struggle to want to live. So, absolutely. And Arcana, your thoughts.
I can really relate to this piece. There's so much pain that's been spilled out here. You've really wore your heart on your sleeve here with this one. That last stanza, when you saw that I knew your lies weren't the truth, you left me alone to die on my own without you by my side, and the tears that I cried, with my bare hands I dried, the very last moment before I died. But there's different ways of articulating that death. You've got the death of the relationship, and you've also got a piece of you inside that dies along with that relationship, where somewhere along the line you've given your all, and you've given your trust, you've given every part of yourself to that person, and it's just been spat back in your face, and the feelings that go with that. And I think that you've brought that across brilliantly in the way that you've put this piece together. I really felt it. I think it's a powerful piece and very, very well rhymed as well. So all in all, an excellent write.
Absolutely. Great comment.
Before we move forward, I do want to get to Angel Wings if we can, and if we have time, then The Death of Me and Bluebird. Those are the ones that I absolutely, but if we don't have time, that's fine. I just want to definitely get to Angel Wings.
We will have time for those two. So, yes. And Kate, your thoughts?
This has been wrenched out and put down on the screen for us to see. And I think that's a brave thing to do, to have to admit that your life at that point must have been awful. And they do say it's cathartic, and I actually believe it. I've done a couple myself, and getting things out of your mind can help. I only hope it can help, because no one should have to go through something like that. It's not, but it's beautifully articulated, beautifully written. It's pathos and pain through every word. So I really think you did a wonderful job on that. Well done.
Absolutely. Wonderful comment. Yeah, this is beautifully written. It's a very relatable piece to anybody who has been through depression, who has been through an abusive relationship, and the idea of realizing that you're not going to truly live until you get away from that person and that situation. Great lines all the way through. My question for you is one that we have fun asking people. I am going to hand you a 9x13 casserole dish. And in it, you are going to put the ingredients that make up Myriad Musings. The ingredients do not have to be tangible. They do not have to be edible. What is going in that casserole dish?
My cat's going in there. He's going to take the whole thing up because he's 38 pounds. sense of humor. I love to laugh and joke around. I love animals. I love nature. And I think the rest of it that makes me up is love of words. I love words. I just love words. I love how there's the sound of them and just the flow of them. And I think I have empathy. And I've also got a kind of a wild side, a crazy side. And I've got a lot of anger and rage. I try to keep that from coming out, but I do have a lot of anger and rage.
I get that. And you know what? I think that's a wonderful lineup of ingredients. And I think, when you've been through some tough stuff in life, a sense of humor is particularly important. So great answer. And all right, up I have, now I have Angel Wings.
All right. On there, and can everyone see the picture with that? That goes with it? Is that on there with it? I'm not looking because I'm looking at it.
Yes, it is.
Okay.
Yep.
This was written because I had that. I found that. I come across that probably a couple of years ago, and it just always struck me as something I wanted to write about. And then the most recent school shooting happened, and this was written kind of for that. Little lamb, take my hand and walk with me. Don't be afraid, for I will show you you are safe, and I will hold you near when you are scared. There's nothing here to fear. It's getting dark. It's time for us to go. It's time for you to wear your angel wings.
Wonderful reading. Oh, my goodness. What a beautiful and just powerful and sad write that really pulls at the heartstrings. And Kate, your thoughts?
Oh, yes, that's a heart wrencher. Very well written. I really think you did that incredibly well. The picture is fabulous. Oh, sorry. Like you, that kind of thing really gets to me. And it's such a sweet poem. I really enjoyed it. Thank you.
Wonderful comment, Kate. I think it's a beautiful thing when poetry moves us emotionally. And Arcana, your thoughts?
I absolutely agree with you there, Pam. There's no greater compliment to any poet than to actually be able to stir emotions within the reader or the listener. And this piece really is, as has been said, is a real heart-wrencher. It's beautifully put together. The way that the imagery has been delivered, you know, from the opening lines, "Walk with me, little lamb," you know, it's obviously it sort of speaks to me of a child actually passing over, and they're being sort of nurtured, being told, "Don't be afraid, don't worry about where you're going to go." And the last lines, "It's getting dark, it's time for us to go. It's time for you to wear your angel wings as they fly off on their journey towards heaven." Beautifully written, and absolutely loved it. Well done.
Wonderful comment. And Sam, I imagine that as someone who used to be a school teacher, that you kind of can relate to this fear and this on the topic of school shootings.
Well,
and your thoughts, Sam?
The big problem we have here in Milwaukee is, you know, we're talking about this poem. Oh, it's more of a smaller child. I get the feeling it's a smaller child. My problem here in Milwaukee is that I taught middle school, and every weekend now there's a shooting that may not be at school, but it's children shooting children. And
mm-hmm.
they're dying in our streets. And every weekend I have to wonder, and I have to look at the paper or check the news to see if one of those 13-year-olds was somebody that was one of my students or that I had known as they were growing up, because it's just a tragedy that's taking place in our society today.
It truly is. It truly is. I have to agree. There is so much tragedy out there. This is definitely a powerful brevity with strong imagery, speaking on, you know, that child, you know, that leaves too early. And no matter what the cause, whatever the cause of the death of a child, it's always a sad thing. You know, it just always, like, just really tears you apart. And I like that here you've taken this picture because it shows, you know, a child walking with what looks like the Grim Reaper. And you've made death something, the representation, the personification of death, something that doesn't need to be feared, rather, but something that's there to comfort the child. And so I thought that was beautifully done. And I would like to ask you, what advice, if somebody's new to writing poetry or they're new to all poetry, what advice would you have to offer them?
Well, I'm going to start with, if you're having a hard time with writer's block and you're not sure what to do, go look for a prompt that strikes you. And if you're a very visual person and you like to, like, you can think of descriptions of things, write to a specific picture and then try to get the emotion out of it. Try to write towards the emotion of what you imagine the story is that's happening in that picture. And try to make it personal somehow to get into it. So you're part of that picture.
Very cool.
Not worry about
very
rhyming,
cool.
Not worry about flow or structure. Just let it come out first, and then you can play around with whatever you need to get it to sound better or flow better.
Great advice.
I have to agree. It is. It is. And, you know, like Jeremy says every week, we really need to get a book together of all the words of wisdom our headliners have to offer us. I think it would be a bestseller. And, yeah, great, great advice for sure. And we do have time to put up one more poem of yours.
All right. Sylvia Plath or Charles Bukowski? Pick it. Sylvia Plath or Charles Bukowski? Pick one, because they're both going to be tributes to one of their poems.
Sylvia.
Oh, that's it. I remember now. You had said Bluebird that you wanted to read, right?
Yep. So we're going to do Sylvia
right.
Plath. We'll do The Death of Me.
Oh. Okay, The Death of Me? All right, I'll grab that one then. All right.
This is actually a tribute to Lady Lazarus, my attempt. The Death of Me. If dying is indeed a form of art, then not much of a talent must I be. Having survived every tragedy this existence has tossed my way, including the ones executed by my own quivering hand, albeit a few just narrowly. Since the death of me is my destiny, the agony of decaying I've accepted as my fate. But if it doesn't soon cease teasing me, I'll not just hang around here and wait.
Wonderful read there. And what a beautiful tribute to that classic poem. I really like this all the way through, but especially the lines, since the death of me is my destiny, the agony of decaying, I've accepted as my fate. You know, the idea of being on that edge of death, of being the idea that, you know, it'll eventually come, but for now it's making you wait. So excellent, right? And very easy.
I can actually speak to where that came from. I am a 2-time stroke survivor. The last one was about 2.5 years ago, and I ended up, so if you hear me listing a little, part of my face is paralyzed and my left hand is paralyzed. So, still.
Okay.
And I died on the table again during the thrombectomy. Not died, but I stopped breathing a couple times, and so that part was that. So I'm trying to recover from the stroke, and I just feel like I'm slowly decaying and just going instead of just going quick.
Yeah, well, I have to say with that, I'm glad you shared that, because that definitely puts more into the poem. And, you know, and I think, again, it's a poem that, you know, people who are out there who suffer from or struggle with physical ailments, whether it's like you, they've had a stroke, or because, you know, whatever it is that their body is going through, they know there's somebody out there that can relate to that kind of struggle. So thank you so much for sharing that with us.
Thank you.
And Kate, your thoughts?
Yes, another harrowing, but terribly, what's the word I'm looking for? Not interesting, but more than that. Brilliantly written. And I love the fact that you had something to write to that was personal to you. And may I say that I wouldn't have noticed there was anything in any way being a problem with your speech, for sure. You're speaking very, very, very well, better than I am. You've probably got more teeth than I've got. That's beside the point. We won't talk about that. But I thought this was, yes, I was going to say something. What I was going to say was the horror, I think. But the horror about growing older or getting old is because your head doesn't know. Your mind doesn't register the fact that those years have passed and parts of you are going the way they shouldn't be going. So in your head, you're still like 16 or whatever your favorite time was, 18, whatever it is. And it's very difficult to balance the two things, because you want to be that person that you're in your head. And you know you're not going to do that. So yes, I think this is really tells the tale very, very well, the whole thought of, oh, no, I mean, really, you, the fact you survived two strokes is amazing. So you know, if I had a hat, it would be dust.
Thank you. And I also wanted to just mention paragraphs, well, not stanza two, where the, albeit a few just narrowly, that was a unsuccessful suicide attempt that was almost very successful. So that's what that's talking about, too, because I suffer from bipolar depression. And
okay.
I'm constantly swinging around, up and down, mood swinging. And
yes,
that's
yes.
what that was in reference to. So basically kind of working with that whole Sylvia Plath suicide
mm-hmm.
theme, too.
Mm-hmm. My goodness. I tell you, my dear, you are one brave lady. You've managed to get yourself through so many things that would have flattened a lot of people. So I know it's not enough love of condolence to you at this point, but I think you're amazing. So thank you so much for sharing.
Thank you.
Absolutely. Great comment. And Arcana, your thoughts?
What I liked about this as well, that there's a very serious edge to it, especially all the more so having just heard what you've told us about yourself. But that, to me, as I was listening to it and reading it, that there's this kind of sardonic, dark humor that's almost self-contradicting throughout the piece. It starts with, if dying is indeed a form of art, then not much of a talent must I be, which is speaking of somebody who's a survivor. That if indeed dying is an art form, then they're not very good at it because they're not managing to achieve it. And then the last lines, but if it doesn't soon cease testing me, I'll not just hang around here and wait, which is sort of speaking of taking fate into your own hands and not waiting to die a lingering death, but rather to actually be in control of your destiny, which, you know, has got a very serious edge to it, but also that there's kind of, I feel that it's been done in a tasteful way, with a little bit of tongue-in-cheek in there as well. It's a very powerful piece and very well written. I must admit, I've never read Lady Lazarus by Sylvia Plath, but I think after reading this, I'll definitely be looking that one up. Excellent, right?
Oh, you'll
very
see where
well
that
done.
Dying is indeed a form of art came from then.
No.
That is a reference directly to that work.
Ah, okay. But it's
oh, very
well
cool.
done.
And yes, that is definitely a poem worth reading, Arcana. I would highly recommend it.
I'll check it.
And I would like, yes, and I would like to say thank you, Mary of Musing, so much for sharing your time and yourself and your poetry with us. You know, please feel free to stick around if you're able to while we move on to headlining Sam. And of course, everyone, make sure when you get a chance, check out Mary of Musing's poetry on All Poetry. So, and thank you very much. Okay, now, I do apologize, but I need a couple minutes. So, Arcana, I'm going to put up Sam's first poem. I'm going to need you to lead everybody in comments, and then if necessary, go on to a second poem, and then I will be back. So.
Sure.
And with that being said, Sam, my fellow Wisconsinite, it is now your hour. So I have put up your poem, Oh No, Just No.
Yeah, I have several work colleagues that telling about how I was going to be doing this, and they said I had to share this poem. So the poem is No, Just No. Counting, mostly hundreds, then saying no politely to request to buy those $30,000 cars. No, your credit rating is not 700. And no, I will not do that withdrawal for you without your ID. So if you haven't figured it out, I work at a credit union. And this is some of our sort of pet peeves that my fellow workers and I go through.
Okay. I think that it's brilliantly contrived, very humorous, and I can relate to that. You know, we all want those things that we can't afford, and you know, sometimes we may want to try and find a loan from somewhere to be able to afford them, and then we've got to jump through hoops to try and get that, and it says it all in there. And then obviously there's the big denial at the end. No, you can't have that. And it's really, really well put together. $30,000 cars. I could do one of those myself. Very well done, Sam. I like it. Great writing. What was it that was there something particular that was in your mind when you wrote this? Was it actually based on something that had been denied you or that you denied somebody else?
I work as a loan officer at the credit union. So that's one of the hardest part of my job is seeing these young people come in and they go to CarMax and they see a $30,000 car, but their income says they can only afford a $10,000 car. And it's really tough when you have to tell them no.
Yeah.
It's a hard thing to do.
Do you do it in a humorous way, or are you straight down the line with it?
Oh, that all depends on who's sitting in front of me. But most of the time, I try to break it to them gently.
Yeah. Okay, Weaver, what do you think to that?
Well, I think this is really... I can understand, I honestly can understand how it can get to the point where you've said the same thing in as nice as possible ways that you can 100 times 100 different people. And you're still going to do it tomorrow and the next day and the next day, because that's the way of the human mind. It won't accept what it can't have. I used to run a technical department for Sky TV, and my biggest bugbear was people being horrible to the guys that I worked with. So I had to take over a call. You'll have done this, I imagine, and said, no, we couldn't get an engineer out until 4 days' time. And the guy says to me, don't you have emergency engineers? And I said, I've never come across a viewing emergency before, sir, but it's still going to be 4 days. So I understand. Wonderfully done. I really enjoyed that.
On that note, Sam, can I just ask you quickly before we move on, what's probably the funniest case you've ever had, or the worst case, I should say, where you've denied somebody the loan that they were looking for? What's the worst scenario that you've experienced in that job?
Oh, boy. Well, I think the worst scenario I have ever had was somebody who had passed and their survivors had thought that they were insured and came in with all this paperwork, and we found out that they weren't, and they were going to lose thousands of dollars to medical and burial costs. And that was probably the most horrible thing I ever had to, when I had to go out and tell the people that there wasn't going to be any money coming. That was pretty tough.
Oh,
wow. Wow. I
have all kinds of strange ones. I had a gentleman the other day who came in and wondered why there were $840 of charges on his credit card. And I said, who lives at home with you? He said, well, my grandson. And when we looked at his card, it was $840 spent on Xbox. So we think grandson was dipping in the till there. So, but you know, I see a lot of tragedy, but I see a lot of fun stuff too, so.
Cool. Okay, we're moving on to the next piece.
Oh, I am back, Arcana, just so you know. Thank you very much for leading the comments. Oh, and Marriott is still with us. So.
Yep.
And
sorry,
your thoughts,
Marriott? Is still there.
I like that this one because I've done a lot of customer service type of jobs. The very last job I did was child support for the state of Florida, and I can tell you how many times no. You know, can't do that. Can't do what you know. I can't, you know, I can't tell you how many times you've had to say no and just not people not understanding.
And it's tough. It's hard to say no. Especially if you're rooting for them. If you really want them to get that new car, it's hard to tell them.
Yeah.
No.
It sure is. And good comment. And yes, definitely a relatable poem to anybody who's ever been in the customer service field or, you know, had to work with people. I used to do the dreaded telemarketing job, but that's kind of different in that we're trying to get people to spend money that they don't actually have by convincing them that they have it. But, yeah, that was many years ago. But I liked the humor in this one. It was a great brevity that got straight to the point. You know, I really like that it did have that humor and especially that end line. And no, I will not do that withdrawal without your ID. And, you know, the expectations that people have. I can definitely see why your work buddies wanted to make sure that you shared this one. I would like to know from you, Sam, is how did you get started writing poetry?
Well, I think most of us got started way back in about third grade when one of your teachers asked you to write a haiku or some sort of poem when you first get started. But for me, it really started when I was an art teacher for 30 years, and I used Langston Hughes's April Rain Song poem for one of my big assignments with my kids. And they would get so, you know, it was one of the assignments that really grabbed those kids, and they really took off with it. And just reading April Rain Song to them and having them illustrate the poem, basically. The more I started reading Langston Hughes, the more I thought, you know, I should try writing this myself. So then I just started writing.
Very cool. I like that. And up next we have Grandmother's Attic.
So I went way back to 8 years old for this one. So Grandmother's Attic. She set it aside for my brothers and I, a space in her attic under the eaves. After a kiss on the cheek, we ran right by, heading for that Neverland. The smells of crayons and old books, the Hardy Boys, nearly the whole set, a pile of old paper ripe for the drying, and green army men lined a box of blocks. Fortresses waiting to be built. My brothers would quickly get bored and drag the box downstairs. After I left, I would sit in that magical place solving mysteries with Frank and Joe, then open that tin can full of crayons and draw trees, my favorite. After her passing, my grandfather cleaned house and moved. Gone were the toys of our youth, dusty books replaced by the smells of antiseptic cleaner in the nursing home.
Oh, wow. That's a wonderful read and a beautiful nostalgic write. And such a, I like when there's a surprise ending, a turn, a twist, where it really just has a strong emotional impact. And I think any one of us who have gone through parents and grandparents getting older can relate to that ending and the idea of how things change over the years, of how you find yourself taking care of people who once took care of you. I really like the nostalgia in this. I like that you bring up the Hardy Boys. Very cool there. And so I would like to know if you have other favorite authors or classic poets that you like to read.
Well, when I was 12, my grandmother gave me this gigantic tome, The Complete Works of William Shakespeare. And I've loved that ever since. Currently, I am I'm a fan of Yeats. I'm a fan of Frost. I don't know if you're familiar with Josephine Miles. And at the moment, my wife is Korean, so I've been studying writing Korean Seju poetry. So I've been reading a lot of Korean poets, Kim Sang-gok and Chung Chui. So yeah, right now that's my thing, is I'm really getting into the whole Sijo poets.
Oh, wonderful, wonderful. And may I ask, what is Sinju poetry? Is that like a form similar to like a haiku or something? Or
yes, it's a specific form to Korea. It's a three-line poem that's a very structured meter and syllable count. Sort of like a haiku, but the lines are much longer.
Okay. Well, I will definitely have to check that out. It sounds intriguing. Plus, to be honest, we're still having another 20 or so days of National Poetry Month. I need some different forms to try. So, you know... And Marion.
It is definitely an interesting form.
I'm sorry?
Oh, your thoughts.
I love this. I've actually helped very recently. My father passed away about 4 or 5 years ago, and I just helped my mom clean out the house I grew up in. And so it was the collection point, basically, in our basement for all the deceased relatives' belongings. So as we went through everything, it was kind of like, oh, yeah, I remember this, and oh, yeah. And then all sorts of different things just brought back memories. And that's what this reminded me of, just that feeling of just being brought back to my childhood while I was looking through some of these things that I remembered seeing in my grandmother's curio cabinet in my parents' basement.
Now for us, it was kind of sad because when my grandmother passed, my grandfather threw out everything without telling us what he was doing. And when we went back one day and everything was gone, that was tragic.
I like that. Great comment. Great conversation there. Very cool. And our camel, your thoughts?
I loved it. It took me back to my own youth, how in certain places with a child's imagination, you could be anywhere. You could be in space. You could be walking with dinosaurs. You could be wherever you wanted to be, just purely on that kind of imaginary trip that children can take themselves on. With that innocence and all those reminiscences that he threw in there, the smell of crayons and old books and the Hardy Boys and the Green Army Men, fortresses waiting to be built. Brilliant, brilliant. It just takes me right the way back. And just give me a sec here because I've just had a box pop up on my screen that's annoying me. So yes, it is a magical place, and at the end of it, you know, all those memories have sort of stuck with him, and as you've grown up, Sam. And then we've got at the end the sadness of it all being replaced by smells of antiseptic cleaner, like somebody's life has just been wiped away with antiseptic, but those memories still remain. Love it. Very, very well written and very touching. Good write.
Wonderful comment, Arcana. And Kate, your thoughts?
Yeah, another beautiful, evocative write. I really enjoyed this. Like everybody, it does take you back to a time when life was, well, magical. Wonderful. If you were lucky enough to have that little special place, I had one as well, so I know exactly what you mean. And I would have been the one sitting drawing and reading the books while everybody else went off, because I love being on my own anyway, so that would be cool. But you have got everything in here that would break your heart when it was cleaned out and moved and gone, because there is a special, oh, it's that dusty book, that old book smell. I love it. I just love it. I collect an awful lot of antique books. I think my oldest one's 1780, and I love the thin paper and the gilding around the edges and the leather-bound books. I think they're lovely. So I can understand exactly how that must have been such a wrench, because you would have taken all those things and you would have probably passed them on, you know, and given somebody else a magical place. So beautiful story, very sad at the end, but you do have those memories, which is marvellous.
Absolutely. And great comment there, Kate. All right. Up next, we have The One with the Bazooka. Are you on mute, Sam? Oh, I see. He dropped and he's back. All right. Oh, welcome back, Sam.
I'm back.
Okay. And we have up next.
The One with the Bazooka. So, I hadn't seen my grandfather in ages. Moved so far away it was hard. Remembered that Christmas tree on the porch where I played with the Green Army men as a child. Oh, those summer wars we fought in those bygone days. So here we are to set up that tree one last time. Grandfather would pass 2 weeks later. Yet for now, we would trim that tree, and there in the bottom of the box, one lone Green Army man, the one with the bazooka. With a hearty laugh, we hung him on the tree, and to this day, he hangs on mine.
Great read and write there, Sam. And Arcana, your thoughts?
There's a lot of similarities in this piece to the last piece that we read. There's a reminiscence in there, and I like the way that we've taken something that's quite irreverent, that this little Green Army man with his bazooka, and normally you wouldn't really give it a second thought, but in this instance, it takes on a whole new meaning. And a sentimental one at that, where, you know, because as a laugh, he was initially hung on a Christmas tree as a decoration. There is a fond memory there that is repeated over and over, because to this day, he still hangs on the tree. So in the act of hanging that little army man with his bazooka on the tree, it brings back memories of the grandfather, which I found very, very touching, and I really enjoyed the way that it had been put together. Very well thought through and very well articulated. Well done, Sam. Like it.
Thank you.
And Kate, your thoughts?
Oh, I echo what Arcana has said, definitely. I love the continuity of this, and coincidental, of course, because if you hadn't gone to put that tree up, one last time, you would never have found him. And so you have again managed to carry on a tradition or start a tradition that can now be carried on because of that one lone green army man with his bazooka. I think that is just so charming and so lovely. I like the fact that you have these kind of memories and traditions. That is so nice because that points to you having had a lovely childhood. And I really envy you that. So wonderful. Thank you. Thank you so much for sharing.
Marriott, your thoughts?
I just love the tenderness of this. It's the tenderness mixed with the humor. It got me because my brother had the Green Army men, and we used to fight over the one with the bazooka all the time. And I don't know why we never even thought about hanging on a Christmas tree, but I could just see that. I could just imagine. I can see that thing hanging there. And it just makes me smile. And just the thought that you had that last moment, like 2 weeks prior to him passing, is just beautiful. It's a beautiful way to remember him.
I like that. I like that. Wonderful comments, everybody. This is a great nostalgic rite. And like it was mentioned, it has heart and it has humor in it. It's got a wonderful sense of nostalgia. And I like that it's about the what I consider to be one of my favorite kinds of Christmas trees is the one with all the different ornaments, you know, the fun things that people don't usually think of. I actually started last year with my oldest son a tradition of buying ugly Christmas ornaments for each other. And he bought me a Christmas ornament of Santa sitting in the outhouse. And
oh, lovely.
Yep. But I really enjoyed listening to this being read, Sam. And since we're on the subject of Christmas trees, and it sounds like you have such an interesting one, tell me about what are a couple of your favorite ornaments on your tree?
Besides the bazooka man, I have two brand new twin grandsons. So my daughter took clay and made little foot impressions. So I have their little feet hanging on my tree.
Oh.
And I think the other favorite ornament of mine is probably, oh gosh, it's got to be nearly 100 years old. It looks like a small, like, hand oil lamp. And that was, my grandmother said that was one of the very first ornaments she had ever gotten. And she passed that down to me. And I'm sure it's probably 100 years old now.
Oh, wow. That is really cool. I have to say, I thought that might be the kind of question that would tell us something about you. And it does. It definitely, and it shows in your first those last two poems also is that, you know, the appreciation you have for family. You know, congratulations, by the way, on the twin grandsons. They are definitely going to be keeping Grandpa young and active.
Well, they've just started to learn how to crawl, so now they're mobile.
Oh my goodness. Well, congratulations on that. And, you know, what a wonderful way to look towards the future. And very cool. And all right, up next we have, what is this called? 3 a.m. Gardening 1985.
So this one goes back to my junior year of college, I think. So 3 a.m. garden in 1985. 3 a.m., class critique tomorrow morning at 8. Eyes crusted from squinting, staring at my latest canvas. Monet would be proud. My grandmother's garden is nearly complete. Picture was taken near her back gate, faded now, but fresh in my memory. A dab of green, then blooms emerge. A splash of color fills the scene. caffeine-fueled frenzy near the finish. Spritz of cobalt dryer, and my masterpiece is complete. Just in time to grab a quick cat nap on the studio floor, waiting for the rest of class to arrive. So many a night we had to paint well into the night so that we were ready for the next day's critique.
Oh, wow. Oh, very cool. Excellent read there. And Kate, let's start with your thoughts.
That sounds frenetic. I mean, good grief. You must have had to summon every ounce of talent, I think would be the word for this, to get something. Is this your painting that I'm looking at now? Has Sam dropped? Or have I dropped?
You're kind of fading in and out for me, but that's all right.
Okay. Can you hear me now?
Yes, I can. Thank you.
I moved the mic away from my mouth. I'm so sorry. Yes, anyway, I think this is beautiful. And it must have been so hard to try and be creative given a time limit. You know, that's like a really scary thing. You know, you've only got till 8 o'clock to get something out that's going to be looked at by other people and critiqued. Whoa. Well done. It must have been hard work, but well done.
I think that in class, we sometimes overthought our pieces. If we would have stopped the day before, it might have been a little better. But we were always late night and caffeine-fueled, I can tell you.
Oh, must have been so interesting. Sounds wonderful.
It was.
And I am curious with Weaver's question, is that actually your painting, Sam, or was it one that somebody else did?
It's a small part of it. It's not the whole painting. It's just a picture of a small part of it.
Oh, very cool.
The painting's actually about, it's probably 3 by 4 feet.
Wow.
Holy cow.
Cool.
And, Marriott, your thoughts?
I love the humor in this one, too. You got a really good flair for just weaving in humor. I love the lines, Monet would be proud. My grandmother's garden is nearly complete. And then you go into, I just have to add this, and then a little more here, and a little more there, and keeps going. Like you said, it probably would have been better if you just stopped a couple prior, huh?
You always think you got to add that one more dab of color here or whatever, so it's all good. It was a fun time.
Oh, absolutely. Great comment, Marius. And Arcana, your thoughts?
One thing I've noticed about Sam's poetry, it's very down to earth. It's very relatable. And as you read through each piece, there's bits in there that I'm sure that we can each relate to. It's like seeing something unfold in your mind's eye as you see this scene that he sets, which he sort of puts together in words so vividly. And I like, as has been said, I like the way that he introduces humor into his pieces too. And at the end, you know, it's all sort of, we've got this build up of what's going on here with him struggling to stay awake, just staying alive on coffee, waiting for this class. And then that's the last line. He's just sitting there waiting for the class to arrive after everything that he's put into trying to get ready and get prepared and obviously to teach the class. And I think that as I say, it's very down to earth and very, very well put together, because it must be well put together because you're taking me on a trip with each of these pieces, and I can visualize being there as I'm hearing the words. Very well done, Sam. Love it.
Thank you.
Welcome.
Absolutely. great comment. And wonderful comments, everybody. And I really enjoyed this write. Like it's been mentioned, it's got a great humor to it. It really shows the joys and the struggles of being an art teacher. I really like especially the imagery. In a dab of green, then blooms emerge. A splash of color fills the scene. Caffeine-fueled frenzy. I think many of us who have had to wake up early in the morning can definitely relate to a caffeine-fueled frenzy. You know, just delightful lines all the way through and very well done. And now is that time in the show, Sam, where we give you the opportunity to shamelessly promote yourself. We know you're on All Poetry. Is there anywhere else that people can find you and read your poems?
Oh, not really. I started on All Poetry in, about 7 years ago, and I really love the community and the people, and I haven't really thought much about writing anywhere else. I am writing I'm in the process of finishing writing a book with my brother of Sijo poetry in the Korean form. We're just putting the finishing touches on it, and I'm sure that when I get that ready, I'll put that out on AP. But other than that,
very cool.
I'm just me on AP.
Well, wonderful. And yes, please, everyone, make sure to check out Sam Sampson on All Poetry, make sure, you know, to check that out, because he definitely is a talented poet. And just so you know, Sam, and also you too, Marriott, we do actually have a topic board in Late Night Poets for our group members that have books published. So, Marriott, if you ever want to share anything on there, I can send you the link to that. And Sam, once you got your book published, you know, just let us know so we can check it out and, you know.
I will.
Very wonderful. I look forward to that. All right. And up next we have Wait for Me.
So this is from 1989. So the poem is called Wait for Me. Moon rising off the port bow, westward winds push me to Hukuhiva, southern cross to guide me. Waves sing to me, and yet I miss the song I hear when we are together. Soon this moon will rise for you. Think of me kindly as you knew I had to go. Wait for me, love. It will not be long before we watch the moon rise together.
Oh, that is beautifully written. You know, there's a nice sense of meter within this poem. And I like how it flows and such wonderful imagery. And I like how it speaks on the idea of an eternal love, of a sense of connection. And quite epic for being a short poem. And so very cool, very cool. So tell me about your writing process. When Sam Sampson starts to write a poem, what does that process look like?
Something that I've experienced. Somewhere, somehow, the poem here, I was sailing south towards the Marquesas. Hukuhiva is a port in the Marquesas Islands, and I had gone sailing with a friend of mine, and our main purpose was to see, he's an astronomer, and he had never seen the Southern Cross constellation. So we sailed south and out of St. Thomas, and that's where this poem comes from. So for me, the process is, especially if it's a contest prompt or if somebody gives me a prompt, I take the prompt and then find something in my life that's happened or I've experienced, and I just write about my life.
Very cool. And And Myriad, your thoughts?
This is absolutely beautiful. And I think I actually second that whole opinion of, I just love the idea of like an eternal love. And just that whole wait for me thing is just, it's very sweet. The ending especially, very, very sweet. But wait for me, it will not be long before we watch the moonrise together. It's just really sweet. Like a promise, you know, just I'll be there. I love that.
Absolutely wonderful.
The sailing that we did was one of the highlights of my life, that trip. So.
I can imagine. I can imagine. I like that. Thank you for sharing that with us. Thank you. And Kate, your thoughts?
There is nothing harder than to leave someone that you love. Even if it's only for 2 weeks, it's a hard thing. So if it's any longer, it's there's the worry and there's the missing them, and it's not nice. But you have this as well. You have the waves, you have the song you used to hear, the moon rising for you and for her, and you're thinking of her until you get back to her. Beautiful. I think that's just a lovely sentiment. I did a lot of sailing. I had a little 23-footer, and I loved being out at night sailing. There's nothing nicer than the wind and the sails. It's just a lovely sound, and it's so soothing. But you'll probably find, I found when I came back onto dry land again, I would feel as if the world was swaying. Of course, the world wasn't swaying. It was me still swaying from having to try and keep your balance on the boat. It's a very odd feeling. So, yes, that brought all that back to me as well. I just thought, oh, I remember those days. It was such fun. So this is just, again, very sweet, very sentimental, very lovely. I like that. So thank you for that.
Wonderful comment, Kate. And Arcana, your thoughts?
Beautiful imagery put across here on this sailing trip. No wonder, Sam, you said that it's one of the highlights of your life. The way that you describe it, I can almost feel myself on that boat watching the moon rise and seeing the constellation. Very, very, very beautifully written. And the wonderful thing about poetry for me is that it can be interpreted in so many different ways. Although the poet who writes a piece may have something quite firm in their mind as to what they're writing about, as was the case with this, with you, to the reader and the way that they relate to it, it can have a completely different meaning. And if you look at this from a different viewpoint, you could almost say it's like a story of somebody who's passed over, who's talking to a loved one, and they're saying to them, you knew I had to go. Wait for me, love. It will not be long before we watch the moonrise together. The moonrise could be a metaphor for the afterlife. And I just think that it's a beautiful piece. And very, very well done.
Thank you.
Great comment, Arcana. And you know what? I have to agree with you. You know, first of all, I like that observation that you made, because I had similar thoughts myself when I read it earlier. But I like that you bring up, Arcana, that poetry can be open to interpretation. And it was, every reader can see it in a different light, in a different way. So great observation.
Absolutely.
There. Yep. And Sam, is there any poem on your set list that you want to make sure that you get the opportunity to read?
Oh, not really. Any of them. I like Her Fury a lot. A Few More Years is one of my favorites. So.
All right. Well, then I'll go ahead and I will grab that one, because we'll make sure that you have the opportunity to read that. So there we go. I put up A Few More Years.
So this one is from when my grandfather passed. We were farmers and ran a canning company. That was my grandfather's lifelong profession. And this came about as we were donating the land, part of the land from the farm to the city, so they could extend a runway at the airport. So they were about to tear the barn down, and we went into the barn to see what was inside that was left. So a few more years. Cold metal held warm coffee. The tin handle nearly buried in the dirt floor of the old barn. Grandfather's constant companion, always at hand. Irritating when empty, requiring a trip to the percolator, I dig it out, wash it, remove the tarnish, marveling at the dents and dings of nearly 70 years of use. Now nearly forgotten, I wonder if I can get a few more years out of it. So when going through the barn near one of the windows, I found my grandfather's old coffee cup, half buried in the dirt, by the way.
Do you hang it on your Christmas tree?
That's a good question.
That would have gone on the tree.
Yeah, it should go. It should go on the Christmas tree. But I like that. I like that you still have that. And this is a wonderful rite. And I'm definitely going to comment more, but I want to get other people's thoughts first. Marriott, did you have other thoughts you'd like to share?
It's absolutely beautiful. I love just the exquisite detail, like the percolator, and just is the handle narrowly buried, and just the dirt floor of the old barn, and just very detailed, very good imagery. So I can see it. Like, I can see you finding that cup and imagine the dents and dings on it. It's just very greatly written. Really, you write really well, three verse too. Really well.
Oh, absolutely. Great comment. And Arcana, your thoughts?
Where would any of us be without that hot, warm cup of coffee? It's the juice that's the nectar of life, isn't it? Keeps us a-going through the early hours, a must for every late-night poet. Beautifully written, again, rife with imagery. It actually sort of brought to mind something that happened to me as well, where I remember back in the day when I was at school, in one of the classes, I made this mug from clay, and I tried to sort of fashion it into a face, and it was a bit crude, but it kind of had the desired effect. It looked kind of cartoony and cute. And I forgot all about it. And then years and years later, when I was moving my father's belongings, when we all moved into a house together, I went into this old cupboard, and there it was sitting there in front of me. And I've kept hold of it since then, and I still use it to this day from time to time. And it kind of put me in mind of that. Very nostalgic, beautifully written and expressed. And I have to agree with what Myriad says. You've definitely got a talent there for writing in freestyle as well. So excellent, right? Very well done.
Thank you.
Great comment. And Kate, your thoughts?
Yeah, another beautifully crafted poem. I really enjoyed this. I envy your eye for detail. I really do. I'm afraid it's not something I'll ever be able to do, write anything that basically gives you those mind pictures that you don't even need to do anything other than just listen to the words and it's all there. So I really think that's a great talent to have. I read, like, I scan sentences. I don't read individual words. I scan the sentence and get the idea of it, which I feel means I lose quite a bit, and I never retain it either. So I think I write poetry the same way. I kind of scan. So I think this is a wonderful talent to have. And so I'm really enjoying your work. Thank you so much.
Sorry, I've just got to intervene there and say you're selling yourself short there, Kate. You write wonderful poetry that's rife with imagery. And I remember commenting on one quite recently where you hadn't even realised what you were actually saying in there. So I have to disagree. I think you are excellent yourself too.
Oh, thank you. That's so kind. Well, thank you. thanks, love. Great.
Absolutely, and I second that. So great comments, everybody. And this is a wonderful brevity all the way through. And I like how it's a tribute to your grandfather, but I also like that it's a tribute to a life well lived for anybody. And I especially like where it says, marveling at the dents and dings of nearly 70 years of youth, because really I think that's such a great representation of what a truly lived life is. It's full of those dents and dings because we've done something with it, not just had it sit on a shelf and look pretty. So an amazing write and very well done. And okay, Sam, now it's your turn for the casserole dish question. I've handed you a 9x13 casserole dish, and in it you are going to put the ingredients that make Sam Samson. They do not have to be edible. They do not have to be tangible. What are you putting in the casserole dish?
Putting my family in there. Everything, my wife and I, it's all about family. And God first, family second. And then I, as an artist, one of the things I really enjoy is that my background is painting and drawing, and I was a art teacher, obviously, but I can also play the guitar very well. I write my poetry. I like to create art in many forms instead of just one. So that's what I throw all that in the pot.
I like that. That is a wonderful combination. And very cool that you play the guitar. Do you have a favorite type of music that you like to play or listen to?
Well, if you're old enough like I am and you can remember John Denver, that would be the genre that I'm throwing in there.
Oh, yeah.
I actually have, good stuff. I actually have the same... What inspired me was I watched a show one time on TV where John Denver played, and he picked up a 12-string guitar. And I ran to the store, and I bought the exact same guitar because I wanted to be able to play it just like him.
Oh, wow. That really is being inspired. That is cool.
Yeah, so my guitar is actually a 12-string. 12-string.
I'm jealous, Sam. I mean, I'm artistic myself, but one thing I've always wished that I could do is play an instrument. So more power to you, my friend. Well done.
Yeah. Well, it's not too late, Arcana. They say you can teach an old dog new tricks.
I think this old dog's had its day.
Oh, dear. Oh. Wonderful. I'm so glad you didn't say that to me.
Stelina keeps great trying comment. To get me to sing, and it's just not happening. No way, Jose.
Right. yep. But great comments, everybody. All right, Sam, I've put up our dishes.
Actually, can I change that?
Oh, absolutely, yes.
I'd rather finish with her fury.
Her fury. All right. I will go ahead and grab that one. And here we go. All right. I have put up her fury. Go ahead, give that a read, please.
So when we talked about the Korean form of Sijo, this is a Sijo poem. So her fury, bitter winds come down the lake as February's storms come through. Not often does this lake freeze, mighty Michigan and her waves. One last kiss from November's witch, then she sleeps until the fall. I stand here on the western shore, her wrath flung as sharp needles sweep. Her legend and ancient tale brought forth in a gale of fury. Anger spent, indignation wanes, quiet now as she slumbers. So those of us that live in Wisconsin, anywhere near Lake Michigan or Lake Superior, we know the legend of November's witch. And those are the storms that come from November until February that come down the lake, and they can be quite powerful. And the Great Lakes are one of the greatest shipwreck places in the world because of those storms.
Yep. The song about the Edmund Fitzgerald. That was an example of an infamous sinking in Lake Superior. But
yeah, that was the November witch storm. It sank in Lake Superior, 10 miles Door County here in Wisconsin.
Yep. I actually myself used to live in Superior, Wisconsin. So like right next to Lake Superior, and work in Duluth, Minnesota. Now I live in a small little town called Trigal, which is about an hour and a half south of Superior. So I'm no longer have the lake effect, but obviously still the cold weather and the long winters. So definitely a relatable piece to me. I really enjoy the personification of the winter storm, how you describe it. The one last kiss from November's witch, then she sleeps until the fall. And that is so true. There's such water is such a beautiful element. But like any part of nature, it also has this very serious, serious side. And you bring that out so well. And my question for you, Sam, my last question for you of the night is, I would like to know what advice you would offer up to new poets.
First, you need to read. There is so much that you can learn just by reading other poets. And then, much like Miriam said earlier, you just have to write. Even if you don't think it's any good, even if you think it's just a piece of bahooey, you just have to write. And then the other thing is, being on something like All Poetry, you need to get feedback and allow people to help you grow in that task as well.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. Yes, I definitely agree with that. Great, great words of wisdom. And Arcana, your thoughts?
Again, wonderful poetic lines in there, beautiful descriptions, and again, he paints a very vivid picture. And I know we're running short on time, so I'll keep it brief. I just think it's a wonderful piece. In fact, to be perfectly honest with you, I think it's my favorite of the evening. Very well done.
Absolutely. Great comment. And no worries about keeping it super brief, at the end of this show, because we always usually go like a couple to a few minutes over just to make sure that the two poets have like equal time. But wonderful comment. And Marriott, your thoughts?
I absolutely loved that one last kiss from November's witch line. It's just well written. It flows so nice, and it just really brings that image to mind. I mean, I've never had the lake effect storm. I live in Connecticut now. I mean, that's where I was born and raised. But we've got those Arctic blasts that come through, and we get the nor'easters. So I'm imagining the November witch kind of being something like that, if not worse. I just like the idea of it being furious and angry, like Mother Nature.
Yes, exactly.
Anger.
Yeah. Very similar, like you said, to that nor'easter, that very just powerful, angry storm. So very cool comment. And Kate, your thoughts?
Oh, yes. Nature. Whoa. Nature, as you say, can be mild and wonderful and wicked, and it can either kiss you or kill you, basically. That's what it's like. It can be very scary, and I can't imagine living in an area like that with the Michigan waves and, oh my goodness me, Last Kiss from November's Witch. Beautifully written, and it really gave me an insight into a different part of the world that I knew nothing about. That was great. I loved all the education we get. So cool. So yes, and it's a Siju. Siju, is that how you say it? A Siju chain? So that's what it looks like. It's very nice. That'd be great fun to write in that form. So yes, thank you so much for sharing that one.
Thank you.
My pleasure.
Wonderful comment. Wonderful comment, Kate. I would like to say thank you to both Myriad Musings and Sam Sampson for spending this last couple of hours with us, for giving us the opportunity to headline you and your poetry, and for sharing yourselves with us. Thank you, of course, to my co-hosts for the night, Arcana and Kate. I really appreciate you both. And Arcana, if you would be so kind as to close us out, I would greatly appreciate it.
Okay. Well done for an excellent night of poetry, Myriad and Sam. Thank you very much. Thank you, everyone that's been on the show. And it's been a pleasure hanging out with you all. And have a great day for everybody that's still there.